wooden canoes have a special place in today's world. What a treasure to have a handcrafted canoe, and one that carries such a history, like a Seliga canoe does, that represents the North Woods and was actually built purposely for canoe camping and canoe tripping and fishing in the Boundary Waters.
Robin Radcliffe is a doctor of veterinary medicine. Robin works with some of the most critically endangered species in the world, but he's also the author of children's books. And as you might guess, he's an avid paddler. I'm Jim Gallagher, and today on Paddle Minnesota, we look at the life of master canoe builder Joe Seliga, captured in a new children's book titled Canoe Man Joe. It's a biography written by Robin and illustrated by Ely resident Concy Powell. Today, I talk with Robin and Concy about bringing this project to print. Robin, you're a doctor of veterinary medicine at Cornell University. How does a doctor of veterinary medicine come to write a children's book?
Well, that's a really good question. This is my second children's book. The first one I authored was more in line with my conservation work. It was a children's book called The Hornless Rhinoceros about conservation of some of the most endangered rhinos that live in the rainforest of Southeast Asia, the Sumatran rhino and the Javan rhino. In my conservation work, I've always included the local community, and working with people has been a really important part of that. Growing up in western Wisconsin and spending a lot of time in the Boundary Waters canoe area and adjacent Quidico Provincial Park, I came to value that part of the world and also the people that live there. Joe Seliga was, I guess, a natural icon for me because he represented not only this part of the world, the people there, but his work and his can-do attitude really appealed to me. I really like handcrafted things like wooden canoes, and it was easy for me to choose Joe as a next subject for a children's book.
You own a Seliga canoe. What's special about a Seliga canoe?
It represents a heritage that was an important part of the North Woods canoe history, and Joe helped create that through his canoes and through working with the camps like Camp Widgiewagon and a number of other canoe camps in the region as well. When I paddle a Seliga canoe, I feel like I'm carrying a lot of that history with me, and I feel like Joe is a part of me. Sigurd Olsen probably said it best in his writing. He wrote, "He who is part of a canoe is part of all that canoes have ever known." And I think that's really comes across when you paddle a Seliga canoe.
What is it about framing a story in a children's book that attracts you? There's a deceptive simplicity to it, but it's not simple.
In a children's book, you have 32 pages, and you really have to tell the story and show the story. So the words are usually limited. I think we have less than 2,000 words. Also, we chose to do a biography of Joe's long life, and it covered more than 80 years, which was quite an eventful life. So we had to be quite strategic in how we developed the storyline. Joe learned how to build canoes by his own will. There were no canoe factories or wooden boat schools like there are today. He worked on the family's two Morris canoes when they first one was stolen and was damaged during that process, and he had to restore it. And then later, he had an accident on the Nenemoose River paddling with his father. So Joe had to figure out how to restore it. So those are the elements that I think we wanted to capture in the book, kind of Joe's can-do attitude, how you can teach yourself to do something, even though there's very little in the form of support. His life was that way. His canoes are really works of art, so it's a real testament to his dedication and his devotion to the craft of canoe building.
It seems like it's essential to find an illustrator who could capture the themes of canoe country and the North Woods. How did you find Concy Powell?
That's a really interesting part of this whole story. I started this story right around 2008. I contacted the Seliga family. This was a few years after I met Joe. I got the permission from the family to go ahead with this idea. It took more than a decade. But quite early on in the process, I contacted Concy Powell because I really liked her work. I had done a lot of exploration of children's books, and particularly children's books that had themes of the North Woods and Boundary Waters Canoeary, and Kanzi Powell really captured my heart with her illustrations. I reached out to Kanzi, and she acted as a mentor to me, which I was surprised because she's a fairly well-known illustrator. Kanzi helped me steer it to a real biography of Joe's life, which was an important step in the process. We worked with a small company from Vermont, Green Writers Press, and they were thrilled when I introduced Kanzi as a potential illustrator for the book. Kanzi, she's restored canoes. She's from Ely. She knew Joe. She met Joe. She had access to all the historical records, including photographs, and she was well-positioned to really illustrate the book. In fact, I told Kanzi I couldn't see anyone else being the illustrator for this story.
That was Robin Radcliffe, the author of the new children's book, Canoe Man Joe, a biography of Ely canoe builder Joe Saliga. Coming up next, a conversation with the illustrator for the book, Kanzi Powell. But first...
My name is Andrea Strom with Crapola Granola, and you are listening to Paddle, Minnesota on Northern Community Radio.
I met with Kanzi this fall at her off-the-grid home outside of Ely, where she lives with her husband and two huge Newfoundland dogs who occasionally supervised her conversation.
Go lie down. Go settle.
So you've illustrated a children's book about Joe Saliga. Did you get a chance to meet Joe?
I did. I met him twice. The first time I met him was when the book that Jerry Stelmach and Deborah Sussex did about him. He signed my book, and I shook his hand and talked to him and, you know, chatted a little. And so that was the first time I met him. The second time I met him was the spring before he died in the autumn. He was distinctly older then. It was at a graduation party that we'd been invited to, and I went up to him and said how much I'd enjoyed the book, and I think he remembered having met me. He took my hand in both his hands, you know, to shake it, and then he just held on. And we talked for probably 25 minutes, and he was holding my hand between his two hands the entire time, just kind of holding on like this. And I don't remember what we talked about, but I do remember that he had these crinkly wrinkles around his eyes, and that his hands were holding my hand the whole time. So it's a very physical memory. I can't remember what we talked about, but I can remember how his hands felt. And that's my last memory of him, which I really kind of treasure.
Do those kinds of memories, did they help you in your drawings in the book?
I think they do, because having met him made it so that when I worked from photographs, which I had to do a lot, photographs that Deborah took, photographs that his family shared with me. Both his daughters were very gracious and shared a ton of family photographs. Having met him enabled me to kind of extrapolate from what I was seeing in the photographs.
The creative development of Joe's story kept moving as Robin and Kanzi worked. Along the way, they included a couple of important possessions from Joe's life as characters in the book.
The editor suggested that perhaps the Morris canoes needed to be stronger characters in the story. As soon as she mentioned it, both Robin and I thought, oh, of course, of course. I mean, we already knew that in our hearts and brains, but we were so close to the story. These Morris canoes were instrumental in Joe Saliga learning his craft as a canoe maker.
It sounds like you draw from a lot of sources for inspiration. Have you gotten stuck and you've just needed something to get you off center?
You're dealing with the canoe making tools, and things like that have not been difficult because we have canoe making tools around here. You know, I've worked with actually making a canoe. There's other things. An example is there was a description of how when Joe was the first time he was bending ribs, and there was this description of him using inner tube from a Model T and adding steam. And so in my initial sketches, I just sort of showed what looked like an inner tube, you know, like a sausagey thing, and a camp stove which was I had sort of as a single modern-looking camp stove. Well, as soon as I started really researching that, I thought, well, this isn't it exactly what a camp stove would have looked like then. So I needed to go back and figure out what kind of camp stove would have been there in the 30s. Also, in reading the description of what he did, said he used a gas can. And it's like, oh, well, you don't just go get a contemporary gas can. You have to go sleuth around and find out what did a 1930s gas can look like, which is actually pretty fun. And the fact that we have the internet now makes that a whole lot easier than it might have been otherwise. I do a lot of sleuthing. I gather a lot of images because a primary rule in terms of working on nonfiction, and this whether this is verbal or imagery, is that you need at least three primary resources.
Tell me about some of the field research that you did.
One of the more interesting things we did was my husband and I paddled to the Nine Moose River, because one of the things that happened with 18-foot Morris canoe that was instrumental in Joe learning canoe craft was that when he was 20 or something like that, he and his father were going to go fishing on the Nine Moose. They drove up the Echo Trail, started down the Nine Moose, and this is at the time of year when water's high in the spring. His father was taking the empty canoe down the fast water. A tree had come down, and the canoe cracked into it, cracked a bunch of ribs. They were able to limp home, essentially. The two people that were there are both gone. There's nobody that you can ask to know exactly where it happened. So Raj and I put in our canoe, and we paddled down to where we figured it had happened. Well, we did it in the early spring, and we bushwhacked along the whole course of the narrow place where they would have gone down. And one of the things that became very clear to us is that there is this very gentle, almost imperceptible curve to the river. And it seemed 100% plausible that, yes, this would be the place. So this was a really exciting thing for us to figure out. And so that's what I showed. When you're doing research, you have to take as much information as you have, cobble it together with other information you have, and make your best estimation of what something happened. And that's what we did there. There's this huge, big cedar tree there now. When I did my illustration of where they put in, I have a cedar tree that hopefully looks about 70 years younger. But this cedar, I think this cedar was there.
The two Morris canoes from the Saliga family, each over a century old, were restored this past year and are part of the extensive fleet of wood canoes maintained and paddled by YMCA Camp Widgiewagon, including 58 Saliga canoes. Joe and Nora Saliga's legacy includes children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and over 600 wood and canvas canoes built in their shop. Canoe Man Joe was written by Robin Radcliffe and illustrated by Concy Powell. This book is out now on Green Writers Press. For Northern Community Radio, I'm Jim Gallagher.
It's Paddle, Minnesota, produced by Jim Gallagher and made possible in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.